Z-Trim Appetite Control is perfect for taking the edge off hunger.
I lost 6 pounds the first week and never felt hungry.
I lost a full pant size.
I've lost 15 pounds in 2 months without dieting.
Without dieting.
You're hearing the success stories of people who have discovered Z-Trim Appetite Control. Developed by the USDA, all-natural Z-Trim helps you feel satisfied before you eat more than you should.
I can breeze through work without distracting hunger pains.
I don't have to exercise, and I still eat the foods that I love.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is a healthy way to help manage your weight regardless of diet or exercise.
I simply take 2 capsules before each meal.
Z-Trim Appetite Control is fantastic.
For people who need to manage their weight with limited physical activity, Z-Trim provides a naturally healthy option.
To order Z-Trim Appetite Control capsules made with USDA-developed Z-Trim, go to ztrim.com. That's ztrim.com. And enter the code word NATURAL for a 10% listener discount. Or call 1-877-MY-Z-Trim. The only thing you have to lose is weight.
The best way to defeat the totalitarian of hate is with an ideology of hope, an ideology of hate.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, that's Chuckle Nuts on the war tour, out there talking to the troops about the ideology of hope. No hate, no hope, hate, hope. Mangling his own pathetic rhetoric to our troops at Fort Benning here in Georgia today. We have a couple of moron sounds for you tonight. Talk about irony. Bush has been calling for bipartisanship since the American people told him to get out of town the last congressional elections. He didn't think that would mean his own Republicans would turn on him where it concerns Iraq, but thank God that's starting to happen. If you had access to C-SPAN 3 today, you may have witnessed some of those amazing Senate Foreign Relations hearings today with Secretary of State Condoleezza Valdez justifying Bush's insane war escalation plan to what amounted to a panel of absolutely disbelieving and very pissed off Democrat and Republican senators, most of them. There are a couple of Republicans who, well, that was over on the House side. This Duncan Hunter, who used to be head of the House Armed Services Committee and now is a ranking member, somebody ought to just arm that son of a bitch and send him to Baghdad and let him do whatever he needs to do. We have an awful lot of audio highlights tonight to share with you in case you missed it. And we were very frustrated here. Kathy was, I should say. I took the kid and got out of the house. C-SPAN 1, C-SPAN 2. CNN, Fox, MSNBC, forget about it. If you really wanted to see gavel-to-gavel coverage of what went on in the United States Senate today and the House and the press conference prior to the hearings, you had to have C-SPAN 3. Now, we happen to have that on our cable system. But if you don't have it, then you missed it. And I watched a lot of it coming and going today and then paid close attention to tonight's evening news, the 22-minute headline services provided by ABC and CBS and NBC, the anchors for which they pay millions of dollars to sit there and read off some headlines for us. And other than Chuck Hagel's unloading on Condoleezza Valdez and an occasional stray comment from Barack Obama, because he's the media star of the moment to these corrupt networks, the American public was not given any information today at all as to what happened in those hearings. But I tell you, I'm starting to have my faith restored in the Democrats. I think maybe they mean it. I think maybe they mean it. And a few Republicans. Maybe this psychopath in the White House has pushed the limits of what we the people can tolerate to the extent that he's going to be stopped. Now, I don't know. The plan B is to do what they did today. I guess you heard about this. There was a raid overnight, our time, after Chuckle Nuts made his deer in the headlights pitch last night. There was a raid by U.S. military, nobody knows where they came from, that almost turned into a shooting incident between Kurdish Peshmerga forces in northern Iraq and U.S. military. They raided an Iranian consulate, held people hostage. What else? What other word are you going to use? I believe the Iranians have been let go, but the American troops, if that's what they were probably mercenaries, took computers, hard drives, phone records. Now remember what Bush said last night. He's on the verge of starting World War III. He doesn't care. He couldn't care less. The Christian nutballs in this case couldn't care less. The Israelis couldn't care less. And Iran is the target. So, after what he said last night, almost instantaneously, a raid against the sovereignty of Iran. We are not in a state of war with Iran, although according to just about every legitimate source that's willing to talk, the U.S. has had operatives inside Iran for the past 6 or 8 months, painting, as they call it, radar, and using technology that you and I probably don't even know about, targets, so that when the missiles are launched, the Persian missiles are launched, they have a targeting. They have the targeting coordinates already down. There's really some heavy-duty stuff going on. Anyone who thinks that Bush is going to pay the least bit of attention to Chuck Hagel or Barack Obama or Barbara Boxer is out of his mind or her mind. Bush doesn't care about that kind of stuff. He doesn't care about democracy. He's never been about democracy. He talks about democracy or freedom in Iraq, while here at home he has done everything that he possibly can to end democracy. You and I both know it. There's no point even discussing that. He's a lying son of a bitch that needs to be removed from office legally and peacefully. He really does. Remember, I don't remember, but I remember reading, right before Hitler invaded Poland in 1939, there was the charge that the Polish cavalry had attacked across the border into Germany, attacked a tank battalion on horseback. And as a result of that, Hitler found it necessary to invade Poland. Now, Bush is doing precisely the same thing where it concerns Iran. The idea is to provoke the Iranians into some sort of a response, at which point the United States will go after the targets that have been laid out by the people we have inside that country. The Iranians will respond to that, and at that point, then the Israelis or the U.S. can launch the low-yield nuclear weapons. Now, you know, to some pundits, among them Pat Buchanan, I watched Pat Buchanan on Tucker Carlson's show tonight on MSNBC, MSNBC. And Buchanan was there with Peter Beinart, who is now the, managing editor of New Republic, and who was the guy who used to be Clinton's press secretary? God, I'm drawing. It doesn't matter. The three of them there were there talking with Tucker Carlson. And Buchanan said pretty much what I just said. Now, we understand Buchanan's kind of a nutball. He is. He's one of the few true anti-Semites. You know, the Israeli lobby likes to point and paint anybody who disagrees with their worldview as an anti-Semite, which is nonsense. But Pat Buchanan happens to be one. So anytime Buchanan talks, even though you find yourself agreeing with him, you've got to kind of, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Not because he's an anti-Semite. Oh, hell no. But because Pat is kind of, he's like I am. He's an hysteric. Only he gets hysterical about the wrong stuff. I get hysterical about the right stuff. So this is probably one of the most dangerous times that we've been in. And the thing that is appalling to me is that most of us aren't aware of it. that George Bush, and have you noticed that Dick Cheney has evaporated? He's gone. Have you noticed that the past few days? Gone. Totally gone. This rat bastard is someplace doing the kind of evil that he does. God only knows where he's at. But Bush and the neocons have got us in a position right now that is just absolutely pregnant with the worst kind of danger that we could face. This is really a critical time. The the Kudites in Israel are just mouth breathing with anticipation of some sort of a confrontation with Iran. The neocons in this country are doing the same thing. The Christian right in this country is holding its collective breath because, you know, if we have a nuclear exchange and all hell breaks loose in the Middle East, why, Jesus is going to come home. And then won't we all be happy? And the Christians all be raptured up naked, and the rest of us can sit down here in the death and destruction. And the Islamic fundamentalists, who are also equally as crazy as the Christian fundamentalists, are probably in their way hoping for the same thing. These are dangerous times. Now, I'm going to ask you, don't call in, because for the next, it's going to take more than an hour. But I want you to hear what you missed today, unless you had C-SPAN 3. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M.
Your host for a Pience Friends future, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Greg in Reno emailed in before the show and said, Mike, do you realize that Bush has now joined forces with the Somali warlords? That the same group that Black Hawk downed the U.S. out of Somalia to overthrow another duly elected government, which happens to be Muslim in Somalia. I've kind of let that one slide by, Greg. I didn't take the time to figure out, you know, all right, who are we backing? I know that what you're saying is essentially true. I just haven't gotten to it. But can you believe that? The people who dragged the corpses of U.S. soldiers through the streets of Mogadishu were supported by a Bush-ordered airstrike in Somalia. It's astonishing. All right, comment from Cindy Sheehan today, and then we're going to get to this sound from these hearings today, and I think you're going to be just stunned. I know I was. Cindy Sheehan writes, first she defines two terms, surge, a strong wave-like forward movement, rush or sweep, escalate, to increase, enlarge, or intensify. And then she writes at truthout.org, Bloody George, the lamest duck in U.S. history, has announced to the nation that he will be sending 21,500 more troops into Iraq, which some call a surge, some call an escalation, and I like to refer to as Operation Increasing Cannon Fodder. The hypocrite-in-chief has said over and over again throughout nearly 4 years of his malevolent and dysfunctional occupation that he would increase troop levels when, quote, the generals on the ground, close quote, asked him to. I guess he never said what he would do if his generals on the ground asked him not to send troops, but apparently one will get canned, as generals Casey and Abizaid recently found out. We humans for peace and sanity need to descend on our congressional offices to avert this calamity in the making. This past week, Speaker Pelosi threatened Bloody George with withholding funds for his newest venture into the abyss, and we need to make sure that she follows through with that threat. Bloody George's funds need to be cut off. He can't perpetrate any more murder or perpetuate any more hatred if the cash cow runs dry. I am tired of the war makers making war with our children. I am tired of our troops being sent over to do the dirty work for mob bosses who are going to squeeze the life out of Iraq and not leave until every asset and every natural resource has been raped from the country. I am tired of seeing Iraqis burying their loved ones and hearing the reverberating screams of mothers all over our country who are being destroyed for the benefit of a very few. It seems that as Bloody George's time winds down, his incompetence surges. And it appears that impeachment is more urgent. An escalation is not acceptable. Sitting idly by and watching it happen is not acceptable either. Cindy Sheehan writing at truthout.org today. We're going to begin, when we come back from the break, there was a briefing before the congressional hearings began today, a briefing by Rice, Gates, and the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Pace. And this was obviously following Bush's Way Forward speech last night. The press conference that these three had was in itself kind of astonishing. Now, after we play two sound bites for you from that press briefing this morning, then we're going to go to the Chicken Hawk himself, who is here in Georgia at Fort Benning, telling the troops, who some of whom are going to go die so that this sick son of a bitch can continue playing Churchill or Roosevelt or Eisenhower, whoever he's playing. It doesn't matter anymore. He's a madman that needs to be removed from office. But there he is talking to men that are going to have to go to Iraq and put themselves in the way of a massive civil war for no reason. None. Absolutely none. You know, Bush and his thugs keep talking about the glorious 11 million people who went to the polls or whatever the number was and elected a government. And the fact that there is a government and a constitution and Saddam has been executed. Okay? Why are we still there? The oil. Bush has almost single-handedly created the Islamic Republic of Iraq. That's how it's going to wind up. Either that or it will wind up in three separate entities, one run by the Sunnis, one run by the Shia, and one run by the Kurds of northern Iraq, which guarantees endless war, because those three entities will no more divide up the oil wealth of Iraq than I would. So Bush has created something here that is an absolute disaster, no matter which way we go. All right, quick break. When we come back, we're going to start the playing the sound for you. And again, I strongly suggest don't call until I tell you we're finished with this. This is going to take a good chunk of the program.
Cosmic plan. Oh, 70 virgins in the sky. 70 virgins in the sky. 70 virgins in the sky.
It's in the Gulf Coast countries' interest that there be a stable Iran. Iran that is capable of rejecting Iranian influence.
Jesus. All right. Rice, Gates, and Peter Pace, all wearing somber faces, were sent out to face the crack Washington press corps today to answer questions about Bush's disastrous speech last night, which apparently the entire United States has rejected out of hand, except for a few nutballs. First reporter asked our new Secretary of War, Robert Gates, Secretary Gates, how long do you expect to maintain the surge in Iraq? And what happens if the Iraqis do not live up to their commitments?
We're going to know pretty early on whether the Iraqis are meeting their military commitments in terms of being able to go into all neighborhoods, in terms of the Iraqis being in the lead and carrying out the leadership in the fighting.
Yeah.
As I say, this is going to unfold over a period of time, and so I think that As I indicated in my remarks, before very many American soldiers have been sent to Iraq, we'll have pretty good early indications of their performance. We'll have to see in terms of the length of time. It's really hard to say at this point. It's viewed as a temporary surge, but I think no one has a really clear idea of how long that might be.
Well, let's see. In that 41 seconds, he said, unfold over a period of time before very many. We'll have to see. Hard to say. No one has a clear idea of how long that might be. So what exactly does all that mean? What does that mean? Mr. Gates and the Bush crime family say it's not an open-ended commitment. So Gates just made it an open-ended commitment. These people must think that the public is going to favor this plan without another exit strategy. No, it's not going to happen. And the reaction from the American public is coming in, as I mentioned. So a report had a follow-up to the answer from Gates about when troops can come home, as repeatedly promised. The question, Mr. Secretary, can you define what success will be then, sir, if you don't know how long it'll be? I know one of the things over the last few months, the president was saying, we're winning in Iraq. We're winning in Iraq. Suddenly, he doesn't think we are winning. So how do you define success? How do you know if it's not working? Certainly, Mr. Secretary, there will be a period where it's bloodier, more violent. But at what point do you really know it's working?
I think that what we will see over time is a lessening of violence in Baghdad. If this strategy is successful,
and if it
over
isn't?
Time we will see a lessening of violence in Baghdad. We're going to be, to a certain extent, the prisoners of anyone who wants to strap on a bomb and blow themselves up.
Oh, okay.
But if, as the president said last night, and as I suggested this morning, it isn't going to be like anything we've experienced before in terms of when we'll know whether or not we're being successful. It's going to take a little time, and we will probably have a better view a couple of months from now in terms of whether we are making headway in terms of getting better control of Baghdad with the Iraqis in the lead. And with the Iraqis beginning to make better progress on the reconciliation process.
This is so insane, because the militias that are in complete control of the bombing and the slaughter and the murder, Muqtada al-Sadr, love him or hate him, or don't even know who he is a Shia, as is a Maliki, the puppet prime minister that is in place. We are to believe, if we listened today to Rice and to Pace and to Gates, we are to believe that Maliki is going to order Iraqi forces, they're going to saddle up and move out, yes, sir, to go into, for example, Sadr City, one of the suburbs of Baghdad, and kill followers of Muqtada al-Sadr, if not al-Sadr himself. That's what these asses are expecting us to believe. How many times today did one of these three say before the various the two congressional committees and this press conference that Maliki was going to, it doesn't make any difference who they are. We're going to go into the neighborhoods. There's going to be no holding back. We'll go house to house. It doesn't make any difference. And I don't know. I got the impression that we are supposed to believe that's the case. And it's not. It's simply not going to happen. Iran is Shia. Maliki is Shia. Muqtada is Shia. Who wants this to happen? Who wants us to attack Iran? Two countries, Israel, Saudi Arabia. What an alliance that is, huh? It's just, I don't know. I have to believe that they think that we are so stupid we can't figure this out. So here was the Chicken Hawk selling his bloody war to some of the people that Pace just said, Gates just said, if somebody wants to strap a bomb to themselves and yeah, we're going to take casualties. Chuckle nuts. was here in Fort Benning, Georgia today, talking to the very people who are going to be blown into red mist, or worse, have an arm blown off, or two legs, or half their brain blown away. And then sent home and told, good dog, you did a great job. Jesus, God. So here he is, some unintended irony from this idiot telling the troops at Fort Benning how disappointed he was that 2006 wasn't as great in Iraq as 2005? Or something, you figure it out.
You know, in 2005, I was able to report to the country that nearly 12 million Iraqis had cast their ballots in a remarkable election. I hope you still remember the moments when people were proudly able to wave their fingers saying we had shed ourselves from a tyrant and were able to express our individual wills about the future of our country.
Oh, God.
In spite of the remarkable progress, 2006 turned out differently than I had anticipated.
Well, in the first place, the Iraqis did not shed themselves, to use your expression, from a tyrant. That's not what happened, you halfwit. And as far as proudly waving their fingers, all I remember are these Republican rat bastards in January 2005 during your State of the Union speech, Mr. President, where the Republicans, on their way into the chambers to hear you lie and distort, dip their fingers into purple ink and wave their fingers in front of the cameras like a bunch of trained chimpanzees. That's what I remember with the purple ink finger. These half-ass morons, these Republicans, senators and House members, as if that toy election in Iraq meant something. Oh, it really did, didn't it? So 2006 turned out differently than you had anticipated? Well, only because, Mr. Halfwit, you were too busy on your ranch and playing your Game Boy and giving victory speeches to notice that your war in Iraq was descending into hell. Here in the next one, Mensa Man explains how he arrived at the New Way Forward plan. Let me ask you, truth seekers, weren't you under the impression that Bush went through weeks of consultations with, scholars and policy experts and members of Congress and military commanders and the Iraq Study Group and listed all these ideas and then came up with a plan? Isn't that what we've been told? Huh? Jesus Christ, now he says Maliki handed him his plan. Or Maliki, that's what he says here. Listen. And Bush said,
the Iraqis must secure their people. The government recognizes they've got to do so, and they put forth a plan. I received their plan, their version of the plan, when I was in Jordan. Prime Minister came and said, look, I understand we've got to do something about this violence, and here's what I suggest we do. Our commanders looked at it, helped fine-tune it so it would work. The commander... so on the ground there in Iraq, people who I listened to looked at the plan and said, this president's not going to work unless we support, provide more troops. And so last night I told the country that I've committed an additional, a little over 20,000 more troops.
To go fight an Iraqi civil war that I created. Well, okay. Maliki. Maliki handed him the plan, and he said, oh, okay, but our commanders have to help fine-tune it so it'll work. You know, our commanders, people who I listen to until they say something I don't like, and then I engineer their retirement or their firing and bring in people who will say what I like. Of course, now there are claims from Maliki's people that this plan was being forced on him by the Bush crime family. Which is the more likely scenario? Huh? Bush going to Jordan and taking something from Maliki that says do it this way, or Bush going to Jordan and Cheney slithering up out of the slime and saying to Maliki, this is where you're going to do it, brown boy. But either way, doesn't this put to the lie all Bush's claims about his heavy consultations? Either way, Bush is lying. Again.
Into the sunset, you and I. With no more.
Saddam Hussein aids and protects terrorists, including members of Al-Qaeda.
Now back to Chicken Hawk Chucklenut selling his bloody war escalation plan to the troops at Fort Benning, Georgia. Soldiers he's about to send to die into a meat grinder that we have no business being in. Obviously, somebody told the chimp that he needed to say mission and say it a lot, because after all, he's talking to people who have been brainwashed into believing that there is a mission. Here he describes the mission that the new 20,000 troops will handle. What is this? Mission number 7, 9? What in the world makes him think this time it'll be successful? We've had 160,000 troops in Iraq, and that wasn't enough. What's the definition of insanity again?
They're going to have a well-defined mission. You hear people say, there must be a clear military mission. That's what the military people have said to me. The mission is to help Iraqis clear and secure neighborhoods, to help Iraqis protect the local population, and to ensure that the Iraqi forces that are left behind will be capable of providing the security necessary in the capital city of Iraq. That's the mission. I asked General Casey, can we accomplish that mission? He said, you bet we can accomplish that mission. It's got enough troops to accomplish the mission.
It's got enough troops? Oh, okay. I wonder if General Casey, who is leaving, I wonder if General Casey, if I remember, General Casey did not say that. General Casey said just the opposite, and he said it in congressional testimony, that more soldiers, American soldiers in Iraq, is not the solution. But there he sits. In front of soldiers, most of whom are relatively young, all of whom have been through what the military does to a young male mind, absolutely brainwashes it into believing in the mission. Don't question. Don't second guess. Get your ass in uniform, pick up your weapon, soldier, and get over there. Oh, keep your ass down, because if you don't, it's going to be shot off. What are you supposed to do when you get there? Clear neighborhoods. Under the direction of your Iraqi commander. This is what they've been saying all day. Now, this is the other insane part. The United States military, to the best of my knowledge, in modern times, has never placed itself under foreign command. Now, there may have been some instances in World War II when General Montgomery Clift, is that his name, had some sort of say over what happened to U.S. troops, but U.S. troops respond to U.S. commanders, period. Thus it always has been, thus it always will be. What do these people want us to believe, and especially these soldiers? The way I hear it, there are going to be two commanders in Iraq, both Iraqis, one north of the river, one south of the river. Underneath the two commanders are going to be four subcommandantes. And underneath the four subcommandantes, there are going to be a series of junior grade officers who will then turn around and direct U.S. troops. No. That will never happen. And the military command in this country knows that will never happen. Never. Not in a million years. And the grunts know it too. Every single one of these soldiers that Chucklenut sat in front of today and tried to dazzle is sitting there thinking, you're out of your mind, bro. You think we're going to go into a combat zone and take orders from some goddamn Iraqi? Are you out of your mind, Mr. President? They can't even defend their own country, and you want us to take... Sorry. But I'll sit here with this blank look on my face, because I'm a member of the United States military, and it's been drilled into me, when your ass walks by, you cause a long shadow, and I'm to sit here and very quietly absorb what you're saying. This is an outrage. lies upon deception, and he sits there and tries to tell these soldiers. These young men, for the most part, and young women who have families and kids and want nothing more than to grow up, grow old. And this miserable thug sits there trying to inspire them to go die. For what? Nobody will answer that. Nobody in the Bush crime family. Nobody in the upper echelons of the military. Nobody in the Defense Department. Nobody can answer that question. To die for what? Oh, this just infuriates me. Oh, really? We got time for the last one? Okay. Well, two more. I just get enraged that as much as the United States military has been misused over the past 100 years, I think we're all in agreement there. In various regional wars and attempts to overthrow and destabilize and undermine and thwart, and how many American soldiers have died for no reason? I think about the 58,000 plus that died in Vietnam. Jesus Christ. And all we're doing now is waiting, just waiting like good little consumer snakes for the factories to be set up in Vietnam so we can buy our clothes a little bit more cheaper than they're coming from China. God! American factories. So here we go again. United States military, with its honor, with its individual acts of heroism and courage, the young man that got the Congressional Medal of Honor today for throwing himself on a grenade that was thrown inside their armored vehicle to protect the lives of his three or four comrades inside that vehicle. Individual acts of heroism and courage like that, yes, you're damn right they occur. But who puts these young men and women in this position? Cowardly, sneaky, lying bastards like George Bush. That's who. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. A couple of quick emails from Seth, who is a flight crew training instructor, commercial airline pilot training program. He writes regarding excuse me, U.S. troops under Iraqi control, and my comment that as far as I knew that had never happened. Seth writes, the 1st Armored Division fell under British command during World War II and got eviscerated by Rommel's forces. General Bernard Law Montgomery, that's what I was trying to think of, was in another theater in North Africa at the time. And Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, writes, remember how they used to say that Clinton was going to turn U.S. sovereignty and the U.S. military command over to the U.N. or to NATO or whomever? Remember how the right-wing wackos used to get so bent out of shape? Where the hell are they now? Well, that was because it was Clinton. That was the other thing. It was amazing to me today. I didn't hear one of these mouth-breathing Republicans like this thug Duncan Hunter from California even bring up a comment. I'm not saying he didn't. I didn't hear it about U.S. Soldiers being under Iraqi command. U.S. troops are going to be embedded with these crack Iraqi units. Yeah, that'll happen. And on was it CNN tonight? For God's sake, or where was it? One of the network. I guess it was one of the network shows. I don't know. It was on one of the news shows. They had their little junior correspondent over in Iraq showing barracks, and he's saying, now the Iraqis will sleep here, and the American soldiers will sleep here. Like, what the hell kind of a game is this? Back to Chuckle Nuts at Fort Benning today. Bush wants us to know his plan is new. Notwithstanding that it sounds just like every other plan that this halfwit has put out there. I guess the new part is that now we're in this alone. Everybody else has gone home.
It's important for our troops to hear. And it's important for the American people to know this is new.
Oh, Jesus.
This is something different.
Something.
That enables the military folks to predict that we will succeed in helping quell sectarian violence in Baghdad. Prime Minister, and I've had some plain talking. I have made it clear that the patience of the American people is not unlimited.
Oh.
The Prime Minister has pledged that political or sectarian interference will not be tolerated. He has said this publicly. The new strategy is not going to yield immediate results.
Some of you got to die.
It's going to take a while. The American people have got to understand that suicide bombings won't stop immediately. The IED attacks won't stop immediately.
Some of you got to
die.
Yet
over time, we can expect to see positive results, and that would be the Iraqis chasing down the murderers.
Some of you got to die.
How would you begin to see a society that is somewhat more peaceful?
But in the meantime, some of you got to die. Jesus, God, this is an outrage. We're sending in troops so that the Iraqis can chase down murderers? Is he serious? In other words, you'll begin to see a society that's somewhat more peaceful. That's the payoff? A somewhat more peaceful Iraq? My God, of course it isn't. Of course it isn't. But there he sits in front of people who have had more military training in a month than this rat bastard had in his champagne unit in the Texas Air National Guard in 6 months. And they have to listen to this. What does he want them to do? To stand up like they do in the movies and say, "Ah, Caesar, we who are about to die salute you." Yeah, as a matter of fact, he does. Finally, this last one from Chuckle Nuts. More unintended irony from Manor Monkey. This one is rich. He's talking about the terrorists in Iraq. But if you listen, he's obviously talking about himself.
They're totalitarians. You know, you do it this way or else is their attitude about government. They don't believe in freedoms like freedom to worship.
Oh, to worship.
Speaking about religion, these are murderers. They use murder as a tool to achieve their objective.
Just like you.
Religious people don't murder.
What?
They may claim they're religious, but when you kill an innocent woman or a child to create a political end, that's not my view of religion.
Hear him
these
drift.
These people need to be stopped.
They need to be stopped.
The best way to defeat the totalitarian of hate is with an ideology of hope, an ideology of hate.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Yeah, whatever. Freudian slip, sure it is. Yeah, yeah. Hi, I'm a soldier. I'm 23 years old. I really want to follow this moron's plan. Oh, yeah, where's my weapon? Where's the next flight to Baghdad? Woohoo! Let's go! Hoo-ah! Hoo-ah! Yeah, I want to follow this guy. These are great ideas he's laying out here. Yes, indeed. Huh? Religious people don't murder. The best way to defeat the totalitarian of hate is with an ideology of hope. An ideology of hate, I mean. Jesus. God! Now to the Senate hearings. And there's that Condoleezza Rice, one of the most incompetent, meaningless secretaries of state ever.
But I loved her suit. She looked way smart. Couldn't see the shoes.
This is a woman who can... I know why they put her out there, because she can absorb, and it doesn't even faze her. the questions and come back with nonsensical BS over and over and over and over again. Condoleezza Rice is one of those pseudo-intellectuals that just, every time I hear them talk, it's like fingernails down a chalkboard. You just want to scream at her or people like her. Do you live at all in the real world? You're making decisions that will affect thousands, hundreds of thousands, possibly millions of people. And you sit there and spew these nonsensical, undefinable platitudes that mean nothing, nothing. I don't know how they do it. So Joe Biden, yeah, I know. Joe Biden asks if Bush thought he had the authority to invade Iran or Syria as part of his new way forward. Because Bush implied that in his speech last night. Condi didn't have a meaningful answer beyond the usual commander-in-chief crap.
Secretary Rice, do you believe the president has the constitutional authority to pursue across the border into Iran or Syria the networks in those countries?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think I would not like to speculate on the president's constitutional authority or to try and say anything that certainly would abridge his constitutional authority, which is broad as commander-in-chief. I do think that everyone will understand that the American people, and I assume the Congress, expects the president to do what is necessary to protect our forces.
You're the Secretary of State. Joe Biden goes on to ask how long the U.S. troops are supposed to stay in this very dangerous position of being embedded with Iraqis on the front lines of a civil war. Listen to her.
And here's what the president said last night, referring to our surge troops. The vast majority of them, five brigades, will be deployed to Baghdad. These troops will work alongside Iraqi units and will be embedded in their formations. No American should misunderstand. It means young Marines are going to be standing next to an Iraqi soldier as they break down a door. How long are we prepared to hold with American forces in Baghdad that are being searched?
Well, I can't give you an exact timetable on how long operations might take, and so I don't want to try to put a time frame on it, but Secretary Gates said earlier today that he expects this to, of course, be a temporary measure.
Oh, my God. Every time I hear her voice, every time I see that mannequin-like smile on her face, and I would say the same thing if she were a man, I couldn't care less about the fact that she's female. About the fact that she apparently spends thousands of dollars on shoes like Imelda Marcos. Doesn't matter! I don't care if she eats live babies as long as she tells the truth about this goddamn war. And she won't tell the truth. She will not tell the truth. She will not. She will only sit there and obfuscate and lie and deceive and bob and weave and jerk around senators and members of the House whose responsibility is to get answers from her. This is infuriating.
I'm sure that Europe is a lovely place to visit. My wife would love to go there every single year. But they're just puppies.
Yep, 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 yep.
They need to shut their yaps, the big dogs over here. I will rule the world forever. I'm straight and white and male, American and free.
Condoleezza, check my pussy.
Hello, Riley. Devote systems, mass destruction, me.
The role of the National Security Advisor to help
unstick things that may get stuck. Best way to put it is an unsticker.
Madness. Back to the Senate hearings. Chris Dodd now has a question for Condoleezza Rice. He lays out all the foreign policy failures of the Bush crime family. And he wants to know, why should the American people, why should anybody trust Bush now? Dodd's very thoughtful remarks ran on for about several minutes, but here's just one long portion of why he considers Iraq to be Bush's fool's paradise.
The president's own intelligence experts have told us that the Islamic world is growing more radical and that the terrorist threat is greater today than it was in 9/11, not despite, but because of the continuing war in Iraq. They conclude their conclusion has become both a physical and ideological training ground for the next generation of extremists. The wider region has been further plunged into violence, as we know. Hezbollah has crippled the Lebanese government. Civil war in the Palestinian territories now seems more likely than ever. Syria and Iran are more powerful and emboldened than they have been in recent memory. We're further away from stabilizing Afghanistan, as drug traffickers and tribal warfare now threaten to destroy its nascent democracy. And the Taliban is growing stronger by the hour. And perhaps most troubling of all is our standing in the world. According to the Pew Center for Global Opinion, most people in Great Britain, France, Spain, Russia, Indonesia, Egypt, Jordan, Turkey, Pakistan, Nigeria, India, and China think that the war in Iraq is a greater danger to world peace than either Iran or North Korea, stunning as those numbers are. The president says that we're in a war of ideas. But how can we possibly win that kind of a war between democracy and extremism when so much of the world considers us to be the threat?
That's a good question, Senator Dodd. But the members of the Bush crime family and his core supporters, the Israeli lobby, the Republican right wing in this country, the neocons in this country, the Christian crazies in this country, they don't care about what the rest of the world thinks of the United States. The Bush crime family doesn't care. Millions of people demonstrated 4 years ago and said, don't do this invasion of Iraq, for all the obvious reasons. Did this rat bastard and his corrupt cadre of thugs, did they listen? No, of course not. Chuck Hagel begins his remarks, but is interrupted by an anti-war protester who points out the obvious. War lies. Stop the lies.
Senator Hagel. Mr. Chairman, thank you. Welcome. Dr. Rice. Mr. Chairman, I would ask that a statement be included for the record.
Without objection.
Thank you. Dr. Rice, we always appreciate you coming before this committee. And before I get to my questions, I want to...
All lies! More lies! Still lies! Stop the lies! Stop the war!
Yeah. There's an idea. Senator Hagel goes on, describing how it's morally and tactically wrong to put our young men and women in the middle of an Iraqi civil war. And you can't win a war of attrition in the Middle East.
I think what the president said last night, and I listened carefully and read through it again this morning, is all about a broadened American involvement, escalation in Iraq and the Middle East. Madam Secretary, Iraqis are killing Iraqis. We are in a civil war. This is sectarian violence out of control, Iraqi on Iraqi. Worse, it is intersectarian violence, Shia killing Shia. To ask our young men and women to sacrifice their lives, to be put in the middle of a civil war, is wrong. First of all, in my opinion, morally wrong. It's tactically, strategically, militarily wrong. We will not win a war of attrition in the Middle East.
We'll be back in a minute with more. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. 26 before the hour. All right, back to Chuck Hagel today on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, who is questioning. Was it Foreign Relations or what committee was it? Damn it. It was Foreign Relations. Okay. Questioning Condoleezza Rice. Hagel here issues some of the most damning condemnations of Bush's plan uttered today by Democrat or Republican. This is the comment where he calls Bush's plan the most dangerous foreign policy blunder since Vietnam and makes a comparison to the big lie about invading Cambodia in 1970. Doesn't get much stronger than that. And listen for the applause at the end.
When you were engaging Chairman Biden on this issue, on the specific question of will our troops go into Iran or Syria in pursuit, based on what the president said last night. No one in our government can sit here today and tell Americans that we won't engage the Iranians and the Syrians cross-border. Some of us remember 1970, Madam Secretary, and that was Cambodia. Right. And when our government lied to the American people and said we didn't cross the border going into Cambodia. In fact, we did. So, Madam Secretary, when you set in motion the kind of policy that the president is talking about here, is very, very dangerous. Matter of fact, I have to say, Madam Secretary, that I think this speech given last night by this president represents the most dangerous foreign policy blunder in this country since Vietnam, if it's carried out. I will resist it.
Yeah. He will resist it. Now, of course, you know that's a Republican. Yeah, I'll resist it, too, and so will you, Truth Seeker. Now, here, Condoleezza Rice begins addressing some of Hagel's concerns, explaining that neither she nor Bush consider this an escalation. It's an augmentation. No, that's what certain women do with their breasts, Condi. She tries here to massage the language and use soothing phrases usually reserved, like I said, for breast enhancement surgery. But Hagel takes the opportunity at the end of this clip to tell her she's a liar.
I don't see it, and the president doesn't see it as an escalation. What he sees
putting
is
22,000 new troops, more troops in, is not an escalation?
Well, I think, Senator, escalation is not just a matter of how many numbers you put in. Escalation is also a question of are you changing the strategic goal of what you're trying to do. Are you escalating?
Would you call it a decrease and billions of dollars more that you need
for? I would call it, Senator, an augmentation that allows the Iraqis to deal with this very serious problem that they have in Baghdad. I just want to note, though, of course, that many of the American casualties actually are taken in places like Anbar. They're also taken really because convoys are moving back and forth in the city. They are deliberately by people who are trying to get us out of the country. They're not because we are caught in the middle of crossfire between Sunnis and Shia. Absolutely the case that Iraq...
Madam Secretary, your intelligence and mine is a lot different, and I know my time is up here. But to sit there and say that, Madam Secretary, that's just not true.
Well, Senator...
That is not true.
In other words, Madam Secretary, you're a liar. Oh, my God. It's just astonishing. Now, Senator Kerry takes the mic to address the Bush crime family's foreign policy failures throughout the Mideast, with the news that there are reports that our puppet government in Iraq doesn't want Bush's surge, but was kind of bullied into accepting this escalation, which totally contradicts Bush's claim that Maliki handed him the plan.
Every general, you yourself, the president has said there's no military solution. But last night, the president didn't offer the diplomatic and political solution. I hate to say it, but this policy is unbelievably off the mark. A failure. Hamas is stronger than at any time previously. Hezbollah is stronger than at any time previously. Iran is stronger than at any time previously. Iraq is more of a mess than at any time previously. That is the measure of a failure. And so the question is, and here we have in the New York Times today a story saying that promising troops where they aren't really needed. A story about how the government itself is saying we don't want them, and how they would like to run the war the way they want to, which I thought was the purpose of this exercise, but we're not going to let them.
Yeah, we're not going to let them. Of course not. Because they're interested in keeping their own natural resources, you know, oil, and the Bush crime family isn't. Saddam Hussein, murderous bastard that he was, no more of a murderer than Donald Rumsfeld or George Bush, or for that matter, Bill Clinton. But Saddam Hussein, murderer of Iraqis, as he was, had one unarguable function. He kept Iran and Syria in positions of total impotence. Neither of those two countries dared start feeling froggy, or Saddam would have jumped, which was the whole reason for supporting him in the 60s and 70s and 80s. Everybody knows this. And now Saddam is gone. Now George Bush tried to prove that his is as big as his daddy's, and Saddam was executed. And now what? As Kerry said, Iran is more of a threat, if you want to look at it that way, than it's ever been. Syria is more of a threat, if you want to look at it that way, than it's ever been. Hamas is stronger than it's ever been. Hezbollah, stronger than it's ever been, thanks to George W. Bush. What did he say one time? Fool me once, shame on you. Fool me. Kerry then asked Condoleezza Rice about how long we are committed to stay in Iraq. Is it open-ended? Rice gives another non-answer, saying it wasn't open-ended, but it's best to leave Bush's words as Bush's words, whatever that means. More double plus ungood talk that takes the place of the phrase, no comment, I guess.
The president said last night that America's commitment is not open-ended. And if they don't follow through, they will lose the support of the American people and the Iraqi people. I don't want to debate with you whether or not they've already lost the support of the American people. I think it's pretty evident to most people that that's where we are. But what does it mean to say it's not open-ended?
Of course it is not open-ended.
All right. If it's not open-ended, does that mean you're prepared, if they fail, to pull out, to terminate? What is the accountability mechanism?
Senator, I think it's best to leave the president's words as the president's words.
Oh, my God. Now Russ Feingold gets his chance with Ms. Rice, beginning with a statement about how Iraq is so much worse off now than it was 4 years ago, and how Bush's Iraq policy has caused all our other foreign relations to fail. This is interesting. He calls on Congress to use the power of the purse to get our troops out of Iraq because nobody else is stopping this madman from his war of lies.
Almost 4 years after this war began, Iraqis are no closer to a political agreement or to resolving the underlying political, ethnic, religious, and economic problems that are ripping the country apart. But the president wants to send more U.S. troops to Iraq. His strategy runs counter to the needs of our strained military, counter to the testimony of our military's most senior officers, counter to the need to address the troubling developments in places like Afghanistan and Somalia, and counter to the fact that after 4 years of failed strategies for victory, the American people have sent a resounding message. And that message is, it is time to redeploy our brave troops out of Iraq now. The American people soundly rejected the president's Iraq policy in November. They sent a clear message that maintaining our troops in Iraq is not in the interest of our national security. They understand that our Iraq-centric policies are hurting our ability to defeat the enemy that attacked us on 9/11. We can't afford to continue this course. And now Congress must use its main power, the power of the purse, to put an end to our involvement in this disastrous war. And I'm not talking here only about the surge or escalation. It is time to use the power of the purse to bring our troops out of Iraq. Over the next several weeks, I and I hope many of my colleagues will work together to take a hard look at exactly how we should do that, but it is time to use that power. Our troops in Iraq have performed heroically, but we cannot continue to send our nation's best into a war that was started and is still maintained on false pretenses.
That would be lies, wouldn't it, Senator? All right. We've got a couple more, and we have to take a break here. A couple more from Feingold, and then Barbara Boxer. And we're going to finish up with Robert Gates, Secretary Gates, at the briefing today. One more comment from him that is, I don't know, I can't quite figure it out, but we're going to play it for you. Stay with us. Back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. All right, back to Russ Feingold. He continues after that statement, which was pretty impressive if you were watching it. All of these people, for the most part, Democrat and Republican alike, I don't know why it's not clear to Bush that it's over. His murderous adventure is over. But to watch these senators, especially the Democratic senators, I have to say today and watching them, these are the Democrats that, this is the kind of Democratic senator that I remember. And I am just so damn glad they're back. Feingold continues with this question to Condi about whether or not the American people are more secure, are safer, are better off since Bush's invasion in Iraq. And Ms. Rice spouts some more typical newspeak about we're more secure but not secured or something. She won't answer even these questions.
Is the United States more secure now as a result of our military incursion into Iraq than we were before we entered Iraq?
Senator, I think that we are more secure.
Oh, my God.
We are more secure, but we're not secure.
Are we more secure vis-a-vis al-Qaeda?
We have done a lot to break up al-Qaeda, the forces that came against us on September the 11th. I think.
But are we more secure vis-a-vis al-Qaeda than we were before we went into Iraq?
Senator, I do think that we are more secure vis-a-vis al-Qaeda.
Oh, my God. Feingold then asks if Afghanistan is better off since our invasion of Iraq, where I believe there have been 36 women so far this year murdered by Taliban, because they have dared to appear in public without their burqa. And she answers with a typical Condoleezza Rice deluded non-answer, laced with some irony about not everything they do is related to Iraq. But didn't Bush say that if we didn't in Iraq, the whole war of terror, a war on terror would fail, and that Iraq is the central front?
What about Afghanistan? Are we better off in Afghanistan than we were before the invasion of Iraq?
I think there's no doubt that we are better off in Afghanistan. Afghanistan has made a lot of progress since 2006.
Oh, my God.
Since 2001.
That's not what I asked. I asked if we're better off since the intervention in Iraq.
Senator, not everything is related to what we have done in Iraq.
Oh, my God. She believes this. Nutball believes that we're better off in Afghanistan? Be very afraid when the Secretary of State makes a half-witted answer like that. Holy Christ, where does this woman spend her days? So Feingold ends here by asking if we're safer from a North Korean or Iranian attack since we illegally invaded Iraq, and if our military is stronger or better off. And Rice says the troops are strained because we're at war. Like, doesn't that make Feingold's point?
Are we better off vis-a-vis Iran and North Korea than we were prior to the intervention in Iraq? Is our security situation vis-a-vis Iran and North Korea better than it was before the intervention?
Well, I don't really think, Senator, that the North Korean test, nuclear test, has anything to do with Iraq.
Well, I think the diversion of attention from the most important problems in the world has everything to do with this terrible mistake. Let's try something that I think is more direct. What about our military? The strain in our military. Is our military better off than it was before the Iraq intervention?
Senator, we're at war. And when we're at war, there's going to be strain on the military. I think that's what General Pace would tell you.
Oh, my God. Some commentary here from Barbara Boxer, who is in fine form today, listing all the different people and organizations and our troops and commanders and foreign advisors who advised against an increase in troop numbers in Iraq, then wonders who the Bush crime family is really listening to in their new way forward plan.
Madam Secretary, on November 7th, the American people voted for a change in Congress, citing Iraq as the number one issue affecting their vote. And a week later, General Abizaid told the Senate Armed Services Committee that he checked with every single divisional commander on the ground in Iraq, and to a person, no one believed that more American troops would improve the situation because the Iraqis already rely on us too much. And then on December 7th, the Iraq Study Group, noting that 61% of the Iraqis who you say support us so much approve of attacks on U.S. troops. They approve of shooting and killing U.S. troops. The Iraqi Study Group, in light of that, recommended that U.S. combat troops should be redeployed out of Iraq by early 08. Quote, absent a political solution, all the troops in the world will not provide security. And on January 8th, the Military Times, and I'd ask unanimous consent to place this, the Military Times published a poll which found that only 35% of military members approved of the way President Bush is handling this war, and only 38% thought there should be more troops. So from where I sit, Madam Secretary, you are not listening to the American people. You are not listening to the military. You are not listening to the bipartisan voices from the Senate. You are not listening to the Iraq Study Group. Only you know who you are listening to.
Go, Barbara Boxer. Now, I have one more from Barbara Boxer that we're going to play when we come back from the break. It's a back and forth with Barbara Boxer and this freak, Condoleezza Rice, with Senator Boxer describing some of the hideous injuries our troops have suffered for this illegal war and asking our Secretary of State how many more casualties she expects from Bush's plus-up surge, saying it's just to be expected. Oh, my God. I don't know how these sound clips are affecting you, but when I watch some of this today and listen to some of these clips before we went on the air tonight, I don't know. I just wonder how much longer the Republicans are going to allow this rat bastard administration to stay in power, much less the Democrats. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour, as it always is when we come back from these breaks. All right, we have two left here, and then we're going to go to your calls. First, this back and forth with Barbara Boxer and Condoleezza Rice, and it truly makes me wonder why Barbara Boxer is not the Secretary of State and Condoleezza Rice didn't go back to being the provost or whatever the hell she was, chancellor at Stanford University. Condoleezza Rice is so out of her league. Oh, my God. So here is Senator Boxer and this poor excuse of a Secretary of State.
Who's going to pay the price? The most moving thing I've ever heard on a radio station, which is a visit to a burn unit and a talk with the nurse. Devin suffered burns over 93% of his body, 3 amputations, both legs, 1 arm. His back was broken, internal organs exposed. As the hospital staff entered the room, they would see photographs on the wall, pictures of healthy privates standing proud in his dark green Army dress uniform. It's very important, says the major, that nurses see the patient as a person, because the majority of our patients have facial burns, and they're unrecognizable, and they're extremely disfigured. So who pays the price? Not me, not you. These are the people who pay the price. Do you have an estimate of the number of casualties we expect from this surge?
No, Senator, I don't think there's any way to give you such an estimate.
Has the President, because he said expect more sacrifice, he must know.
Senator, I don't think that any of us have a number that of expected casualties. I think that people understand that there is going to be violence for some time in Iraq, and that there will be more casualties.
Well, that's good to know. There will be more casualties. The banality of evil that Hannah Arendt wrote about, you see it all through this Bush administration. Name one person in the Bush crime family who is not a cipher, just totally banal, absolutely no reason to be here whatsoever, except for whatever influence they might have in their little sphere of friends and family. George Bush, Dick Cheney, his entire cabinet, including this one. The banality of evil. These people are evil. Senator Boxer could sit there and describe these wounds, and Condoleezza Rice will sit there and say, well, I was waiting for her to say, well, it is a war, or look at her watch, because, you know, she's got to get going. There's a shoe sale down at Ferragamo's later on this afternoon in downtown D.C. Christ. And finally, from the new Secretary of Death, Robert Gates, as he explains the proposal to increase the number of men and women in the military by 92,000 over the next 5 years. I guess they're really serious about stepping up that border thing, because I don't know where they'll get the legal American citizens to enlist these days. That's the other thing. Bush has utterly destroyed the military, completely destroyed it, thanks to this filthy old drunk Donald Rumsfeld. Completely destroyed the military. Remember how they used to, the Republicans always used to say, well, the Democrats, Jimmy Carter, Bill Clinton. This filthy Bush administration has utterly and absolutely broken the back of the United States military. And now they're talking about increasing the ranks by 92,000. Okay. Secretary of Death, how are you going to do that?
The President announced last night that he would strengthen our military for the long war against terrorism by authorizing an increase in the overall strength of the Army and the Marine Corps. I am recommending to him a total increase in the two services of 92,000 soldiers and Marines over the next 5 years, 65,000 soldiers and 27,000 Marines. The emphasis will be on increasing combat capability. This increase will be accomplished in two ways. First, we will propose to make permanent the temporary increase of 30,000 for the Army and 5,000 for the Marine Corps. Then we propose to build up from that base in annual increments of 7,000 troops a year for the Army and 5,000 for the Marine Corps until the Marine Corps reaches a level of 202,000 and the Army would be at 547,000.
Dream on, Mr. Gates. Dream on. He says, first, the president announced last night that he would strengthen our military for the long war against terrorism. Why not strengthen our diplomatic corps? Why not get the hell out of the Middle East? Bin Laden told the United States to get out of Saudi Arabia, and we did. Bush did. Because Saudi Arabia contains two of the most holy sites in Islam, Mecca and Medina. Bin Laden said, treat the Palestinians more equitably than they've been treated. Now, if we can do the one thing that Bin Laden says, and that's exactly what Bush did, because after all, the Bush family, the Saudi royal family, and the Bin Laden family have been business partners for 40 years. If we can do the one, why not the other? Rather than building up the military for a murder machine, a meat grinder for our own people, for this phony-ass war on terror. There's no, you can't make war on a concept. It can't be done. What you do is track down the terrorists. Remember the Bader Meinhof gang. Remember a terrorists over the past 40 or 50 years that were tracked down and brought to justice. You don't invade countries. You don't declare wars. You don't sneak around in the middle of the night and overthrow governments and destabilize governments. You put together an international police action and you get the sons of bitches. That's what you do.
And then there's the other idea of diplomacy, of actually using all this money that we now spend on death and destruction to go in and build up the communities and strengthen the local politics and to show the folks in the Muslim world that there is a way outside of terrorism, that they don't have to, you know, that the sectarian violence doesn't have to be tolerated. There's the whole educating and showing them what good Americans we are, and we'll bring, you know, food and schools and whatever else they need. But I had a question. I just want to know, if this plan is so wonderful, why are our allies leaving Iraq?
Well, the answer is contained inside your question. The last thing I have to say about this was today I really tried to watch as well as listen, watching the body language. And in watching these senators this morning before the hearings, before the press conference, it was interesting to see this new attitude of the Republicans. And the new attitude is they are incredibly subdued. Although they still lie, especially thugs like Mitch McConnell and this half-wit Charles Grassley. But they seem much happier now that they're back in the minority where they belong. Republicans cannot lead. They simply can't. And they knew it. These evil bastards knew it. So today what I noticed on every single Republican, even the ones with whom I agreed during this testimony, but more pointedly, these Republican members of the House, just cocky little bastards up until this last election. And all of a sudden, they seem to be aware of a very critical fact. They can't lead. They can only mislead. So now with the adults in charge again, they seem more at ease. Less arrogant, less sarcastic. Maybe the universe is starting, at least the political universe, is starting to return to some kind of a semblance of order here.
Society where things are like instant, so therefore history almost is like so far back it doesn't count.
Yeah, okay, it's so far back it doesn't count. All right, let's go to the phones and find out what you have to say. Start with Nate, who has called in from Baltimore. Nate, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's all right.
So, first things first, I'm going to talk really fast.
Okay.
Okay, first and foremost, I want to promote Spocko. Okay, that's this website that's out there. He's covering, I guess it's the KFSO. It's this thing out on the West Coast where he's actually broadcasting. He's putting out these audio clips that these talk show hosts are doing on Disney, and they're really harsh on Nancy Pelosi and all these things. Okay,
right.
So I definitely told him I would give him a shout out tonight on your show or Guy James. Hello.
I'm not sure what. I'm still not clear on what the guy is doing and why you want to, you know, why you want to mention him.
Oh, okay. What he's doing is he's actually showing all these right wing rantings on, you know, how we should basically kill Nancy Pelosi and things like that.
Oh, I see. He's exposing the crazies, the right-wing nutballs.
Absolutely.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay, good. Okay, now, first and foremost, I want to, you know, give a shout-out to my my holy trinity, i.e. Mike Malloy, Kathy, and Molly.
Okay. Now, okay. What did you really call about? Come on, let's get to it.
Okay, let's get to it. Okay, first and foremost, I'd like to definitely, when you check him out and stuff, I didn't expect you to come to me so fast. I was looking at Daily Show and stuff, so I was kind of out there.
Yeah.
Okay. Now.
First
and foremost, when I'm talking about these things, I'm just basically saying, you know, when you're talking about Bush and all these things and you're wondering what's going on and you know, all these things, I'm definitely with you. And I feel as though, since you're such a voice of reason, believe it or not, and so many people aren't listening to you because they say you're too harsh and you're too, you know, you're too real.
Right.
And a lot of times, you know, people are not representing and saying, you know, what we should really feel about what's going on.
Right.
Okay, and I'm kind of, like, really out there. Now, but I just want to say that, Mr. Mike Malloy, you're doing what we need to do. You know, we need to get out there in the street and support Cindy Sheehan, definitely. And I feel as though she doesn't get the respect that she deserves. And it really upsets me when all of these people out there are saying so many harsh things about her. And we have all our representatives out there, you know, now. Tonight you've been playing, like, the Chuck Hagels, you know, he's coming out there and he's being, like, really harsh now. But when you look over his history, he's always voted for what Bush is doing up until now.
Right, right. Okay, I got you, Nate. Let me move on because I got a lot of people holding on. I understand what you're saying, and I do agree, I think, with the spirit of what you're saying. A lot of the Republicans that are talking tough now, our Republicans, talking tough from our point of view, our Republicans who enabled this son of a rat bastard to operate. And, okay, I mean, if it's time to change your tune, let him change your tune. Teresa is calling from New Jersey. Teresa, welcome to the program.
Hi, yes. My Mike, I need to ask you a few things here. Like, you're saying, I'm a former Marine drill instructor, mm-hmm. and I think we're all sitting here in days, like, we can't believe he did something else that is illegal. And he's shown us who he is. He is who he is. He doesn't care. He's going to do whatever he wants to do, take mm-hmm. us all over the cliff, mm-hmm. and he does not care. And we're it's something else that they're doing, and we're like, why doesn't he bring the troops home? They and the neocon cabal, that's not what their intention is. Their intention is to wreak havoc, to hegemony. That is what they intend to do.
Coming
That's right. back is not they. How are you going to build all these bases there, and we're talking about bringing them home? That is not their intention.
No, it's not.
And I don't understand. I said, I wrote it down on a piece of paper, and I'm sitting here saying, everybody in office, Marines, I remember telling my recruits, why they're told, I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States
That's right.
against all enemies, foreign and domestic.
Teresa, can I get you to hold on a minute?
Sure.
All right. We got to take a break here, but I want to hear the rest of what you got to say. So if you'll just stay right there, we'll pick you up when we come back on the other side of the break. Stay with us, Truth Seekers. I'm Mike Malloy.
Soldiers of peace are just changing the game. Men who were fighting for all of our lives are now fighting for children, for homes and for wives, fighting for the memory of all the belt and
he's a liberal with a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah. 26 before the hour. We're talking with Teresa, who has called in from New Jersey. All right, Teresa, where were we?
Yes, Mike, I was making you aware that I am a former Marine
right.
drill instructor. I got out before the first Gulf War, and I just say us, we all sit here watch. Well, I didn't watch him because I don't have a stomach, but we sit here and why doesn't he bring them home? And why doesn't he? I said he does not have any intention. He never did.
Mm-hmm.
He and these people plan to go in the Middle East, wreak havoc, take the people's oil, and they have no intention of coming back here. And to hell with all of us, to hell with the Congress. He doesn't mm-hmm. believe in the Constitution. And I sit here and remember the oath that we swore mm-hmm. to support and defend the Constitution. And I'm waiting for us to defend against this domestic enemy, because that's what he is.
Let me ask you, Teresa, how does a Marine or a soldier who I'm not talking about the 18-year-olds who are very easily manipulated into believing the party line, but I'm talking about people with maturity, people who understand that there's a greater cause to serve than the ramblings of one man, and that is what you're pointing out, the U.S. Constitution. How do you do it if you are a non-commissioned officer or even up to I guess once you get beyond lieutenant colonel you kind of lose your mind, but if you're a non-commissioned officer and you're a lower rank officer, lieutenants and captains and majors, and you see what's going on, and you know damn good and well that it's all based on lies and deception, how do you maintain the belief that all military people are supposed to believe in the mission when you understand that the mission is a lie? How do you do that? Tell the people listening, how do you do that?
But you see, I think that's the question is, forgive me, not misguided, but there's something wrong with the question, because I think a lot of information isn't passed down to them. They're in a world that we can't even comprehend. And I don't think it's fair to them to say, you should do such and such, because a lot of information isn't being passed to them. They're trying to fight for their survival. I think the fault lies with the American people, not the Marines, not the soldiers, not the sailors. It's not on them.
Okay, but how, again, maybe I didn't make the question clear. How does a soldier maintain a sense of mission if he or she understands that what is the heart of the mission is a lie?
Because they swore to defend the Constitution. They swore to
But as you point out, these soldiers and sailors and Marines and the other people fight, they're not defending any Constitution.
But they believe. They swore to this institution. Like me as a former drill instructor, you know, you break them down and you build them up to this point. You do as you're told. And to me, they're righteous. They're doing what they're told to do. And we aren't supporting them. We're not bringing them out of this mess. It's not fair to them. They're coming home with no legs and no arms. They're doing as they're told for our sake, most of us who have nothing invested in the whole thing. And we have to lift them up out of that by force, because the guy is not going to help them. They're doing what they're told. Yes, they volunteered, and it's not fair to them, because they're doing as they're told. I remember telling as a recruit, shut your face and do as you're told. And every day I got them up at dark night, get out of Iraq now. Get online. Do this. And now it's even worse. Do as you're told. Shut your mouth. And they do it for survival. They don't have time for that. We, sitting out here on our behinds, have to get up and do something for them, because they're doing it because they were told and because that's their job, and they are not able to. I got out. The reason why I got out, I'm a CO. Reason why? I was like, these people are crazy. They make these decisions, and to hell with us. I mean, I believe in the principle of what was said, but they don't care about you. They don't care. I mean, I think the thing that really upsets me is the Gitmo. Those people down in Gitmo for 5 years with no legal processes, Abu Ghraib. What is this country? What are these people doing? And then you're spending $5 billion, how many billions of dollars, money you don't have, getting it from China and Japan? Like, what are we living?
I understand your frustration and your anger, your rage. I share it. But, all right, Teresa, what is the average soldier, you know, the guy or the woman now who carries a weapon, what is he or she supposed to do? Bush is saying, and the commanders are saying reluctantly, but they're following their civilian leadership. They're saying to these young soldiers and Marines, we're going to put you over here, and you know damn good and well that the odds are very high. You're either going to die, or you're going to get your arms and legs blown off, or half your face blown off, and then try to live the rest of your life that way. What are these soldiers and Marines supposed to do? They can't disobey an order.
Yes, I agree. I think it has to come from us.
Well, I hope you're right, and I hope that people who are in command and control positions will start to resist. And I realize that you got to be very careful with that, because you resist too much and you're involved in mutiny, and you can be in serious trouble. Teresa, thank you. I appreciate you checking in. Thanks a lot for your insight. Thanks for your comments. All right. Take care. We'll talk again. Mike is calling from Chicago. Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right. How about you?
Good. First of all, everyone at the Green Mill says Happy New Year and to say hi to you.
Oh, bless their hearts. God, I miss that place.
They said they got a Jack and Coke waiting for you whenever you come back.
Oh, my God.
Well, to make it real quick, because I know you don't got much time left. First of all, you know what? I was really surprised no one asked Condoleezza the real simple question. Obviously, the administration isn't listening to the people. They're not listening to the military. They're not listening to the Senate. So where did this new plan come from?
Mm.
You know, and I think that would have put her in a pigeonhole that she couldn't have gotten out of. You know, she might have said for secrecy, you can't say or whatever.
Well, Boxer came real close to it. But, I wish Senator Boxer would have gone ahead and said, so, Madam Secretary, who in the hell are you listening to?
Yeah. Just
Now, if you believe what Bush said to the troops down here in Fort Benning today, here in Georgia, they're all listening to Maliki.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, that it was Maliki who met Bush over in Jordan and said, all right, George, here's what we want. These lying sons of bitches, Mike, a 10-year-old could figure out that that's a filthy lie. We're supposed to continue to send our sons and fathers and daughters and brothers into the Civil War. And we all know it's all lies. Every single bit of it from beginning to this moment is a lie.
Yeah, all of us except Sean Insanity. He knows everything and we know nothing.
Oh, that little
Jesus. And Charlie Rangel, I am really scared. He wants to instill this draft. And I'm like, why? So this psychopath can have more ammunition for his human wood chipper?
You sure Rangel isn't doing that just to focus the minds of the American public? Because keep in mind, nobody knows we're in a war. Nobody knows we're in the first war of the 21st century, as Bush puts it. Nobody knows we're in a death struggle with militant Islamists. Nobody knows this is a continuation from 800 years ago of the Crusades. Nobody knows that.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what we know. We know that Donald Trump and Rosie O'Donnell are having this bitch fight back and forth. We know that, what else do we know? We know that Mark McGuire got passed up because nobody voted for him for the Hall of Fame because he's a druggie. We know all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We we know about trying to pay our bills, and we know that our house values are not going up like they used to. This is what we know. Nobody knows we're at war.
No, of course not.
And I think that's what Rangel's trying to do. I think he's trying to shake people awake and say, listen, we're in a war.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great point. I didn't look at it on that aspect. That is a great point. Really quickly, before I let you go.
I don't think Charlie Rangel wants to send in the – Charlie Rangel is a veteran.
Mm-hmm.
Charlie Rangel, if I've got this right, I think Rangel saw combat in Korea, I think. I hope I haven't got this wrong. But I know he's a vet. I'm 99.9% sure he's a vet. And I think what he's trying to say is that when a nation goes to war, for God's sake, it's got to be a shared event. It's got to be a shared situation. Yeah, all right, here it is. Rangel fought for his life on a frozen mountain in North Korea with a 503rd Field Artillery Battalion. He caught shrapnel in his foot in November that year. So, you know, Rangel is a combat veteran. And I think what he's trying to do is to shake this brain-dead society awake. We have allowed this son of a bitch, Bush, to operate with no checks and balances for 6 years. And look what he has done to us. And I think that's what Rangel's doing.
Yeah,
I got to
leave
there, Mike. I'm good to hear from you, man. Call back, okay?
Okay, Mike. Take care.
All right, sir.
Bye.
Every person, every being, your greed, your fear, and your lies ain't gonna push me around. I'm gonna use the power I have. I'm gonna vote you right out of that house, 'cause I am a patriot. Virtues are all swept away in the tidal destruction, the moral malaise, the elastic retreat rings the close of play as the last wave uncovers the new vangled way. But you need
about 9 before the hour. Thanks to Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight in Phoenix. He also answered your calls. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Mark Marshall, Ben Birch. And also, we want to invite you to visit the NovaMradio.com website. It's round, it's firm, it's fully packed. Check it out, novamradio.com. It includes free preview membership in our Founders Club. There's a message board there, dancing boys and girls, all sorts of fun and frivolity. novamradio.com. I want you to drop everything you're doing right now. Yeah. And go visit novamradio.com. Seriously, check it out, okay? novamradio.com. That is our major website. I talk about MikeMalloy.com. Incidental, meaningless. Go to novamradio.com. And thanks to everybody who put the program together tonight. From Kate, her subject line says, time for 25-4. And she writes, what do you think the chances are that the Congress will invoke the 25th Amendment, Section 4? It is about Congress removing the president for incompetence. We would need to remove Cheney as well, of course. You asked earlier where Dick is. He is in his underground bunker in Maryland, planning the next September 11th-type terrorist attack, perhaps with nuclear weapons. I have a bad feeling about this. That's from Kate. 25-4. I didn't know about that section or that amendment.
You suppose they ever picked up the dead deer off his lawn?
Yeah, probably. Jason is calling from Atlanta. Jason, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. This is Jason now.
Hey, Jason.
Here I am driving down the highway. I got my W sticker on the back of my gas-guzzling SUV. Got O'Reilly's book here in the front seat.
Oh, God.
And I've been listening to your program for the last hour, and I've got to admit that I'm starting to agree with most of your positions on this war.
Uh-oh.
Reluctantly admit that, which is unfortunate. You know, I find myself to be conservative on 99.9% of the issues out there. But on this war, I find myself listening to this radio station and more of your colleagues than more of my traditional, you know, my favorites.
Being a conservative does not mean being in support of an illegal war based on lies, deceptions, and thousands of deaths. As a matter of fact, being a conservative means that when that sort of situation is presented to you, you do anything in your power to make it go away. Don't forget what the root of conservative is. It's conserve.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm
glad. Mike, I have one more complaint, though, I had to mention to you. Okay? You're making a lot of sense tonight. I'm enjoying the program. But you did go out there and say that there was no difference, or Bush is no more a killer than Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, that's true.
I think you're making too much sense tonight to go in and throw that in. I mean,
no, that's probably the most sensible thing I've said. What you've heard tonight are members of Congress, Democrats and Republicans on the Senate side. As far as if you want to take a look at the number of deaths that have been caused by Saddam or by not just George W. Bush, but his father and Bill Clinton. Now, it's kind of a given that the war between Iraq and Iran cost the lives of 1 million people. It's also pretty much a given that that war was started by Saddam at the urging of the Reagan administration. Now, as far as what George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, and George Bush have done in terms of body count, I would say that they are, if not equal to, that 1 million dead in the Iran-Iraq war. You know, that was one of the justifications, one of the lies, anyway. There was an element of truth to the lie that he attacked his own people, and he's a threat to his neighbors. He was a threat because we made him a threat. But if you take a look at just the body count, I would say that our last three presidents are probably very close to the body count with Saddam. But there's a bigger issue here, and the bigger issue is this: that by destabilizing the entire Middle East, like George W. Bush has done, even his father had enough sense. His father said to the right-wingers, they said, why don't you go on into Baghdad and get Saddam during Gulf War I? And George Herbert Walker Bush said, no, that would be insane, because we could never maintain order. We couldn't do it. and then his psychopath of a son does it. So in terms of the danger that has been loosed, not just in the Middle East, but on all of us by George W. Bush, that's why I say he is more of a killer, more of a threat, more of a danger. Than Saddam Hussein ever had been. You got to remember something, Jason. Yeah. Saddam Hussein, for the past 15 years, had been under all sorts of economic restrictions. The economy, the country was falling to pieces. All we had to do, if we were inclined to see innocent Iraqis continue to die, all we had to do is keep the sanctions in place. George Bush decided that he was going to cause this invasion and this destabilization. So, I stand by what I said.
This is all I have to get off my chest here. Okay, I'm obviously what you're saying tonight is touching a nerve, or I wouldn't be listening to you. I'd be two channels up, and we both know what channel that is. Okay?
Well, WGST.
Here's the problem, though.
Oh, I'm serious. Yeah.
George Bush would never hang a woman from a hook and let Doberman eat her. Okay, while her family watched.
I've got a couple of instances for you where you're wrong. Abu Ghraib and Carla Faye Tucker. Only in this country, we don't let a Doberman eat them. We put them in electric chairs and gas chambers. I have to leave it there, Jason. I'm sorry. I'm glad you tuned in. I hope you'll tune in again. I'll see you tomorrow night, Truth Seekers. Take care. Okay, thanks for participating tonight. Watch your back. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Molloy. This is Nova M Radio.